Hello, and welcome to this PERspectives Continuing Education Podcast, created by healthcare professionals for healthcare professionals. PER is a leader in healthcare education and offers free accredited medical education programs in a variety of accessible formats at gotoper.com. Welcome to a podcast based on learning about the LID, Optimizing Recognition, Diagnosis, and Treatment of Demodex Blepharitis and Blepharoptosis. This continuing education symposium took place at the recent CECO meeting. In this podcast, we will hear from Dr. Mile Brugic, a partner in the Premier Vision Group based in Bowling Green, Ohio, and Dr. Cecilia Ketting, an optometrist from Denver, Colorado. We will first review updates on the diagnosis and management of blepharoptosis, followed by diagnosis of Demodex blepharitis and new clinical trial data on potential treatments for this condition. We start our update on ptosis by asking Dr. Brugic and Dr. Ketting how important it is to recognize acquired ptosis, and how is a patient's vision and quality of life impacted by ptosis.
So ptosis is one of these conditions that personally, I was never trained to identify unless it was very obvious. And part of the reason for that is there weren't a lot of treatments other than surgical options. And what we realize now is, and this is the way it always works in eye care and healthcare in general. When we see things that we don't have solutions for, they're cumbersome for us clinically to identify, record, and also talk to the patient about, in particular, when there's not a lot of treatments for it. When there are treatments for it and we start treating individuals who have the condition, we immediately start seeing the benefits, not only from the clinical trial data, but also what we see personally. And I think there is a huge functional component to ptosis, whether it be mild, moderate, severe, that we need to be hypercognizant of for our patients. So there's a potential massive influence on the patient's vision and quality of life. One of the things we know is that we can reduce visual field pretty substantially with ptosis. And part of the reason we might think, well, come on, is that really affecting it that much? Well, there's some basic tests that we can do. We can just simply lift the lid in the exam room to see if that influences the way that the patient's actually viewing the eye chart and being able to read it for us. But what we sometimes forget about is that even though the patient may have a relatively low level of ptosis or mild level of ptosis, sometimes those eyelashes actually get in the way of the visual field. This actually increases a patient's chances of falling. And some of us might be thinking, well, how would it increase somebody's chances of falling? Well, when you think about it, if somebody has ptosis, they're not going to look at you straight ahead. Sometimes these individuals, and start looking at this closely clinically, they'll have this compensatory head tilt because they can't lift their lids. So what they're trying to do is get their lids out of the way by doing this. And when they do that, you can immediately see they have less view of the floor. And when that happens, they're going to miss some of those things. So again, elevating the lids and making sure that we're identifying it and treating it appropriately is, for some individuals, life-changing.
We next asked, when is treatment indicated for ptosis?
So as we've had more options to treat ptosis and acquired ptosis, I myself have had to start thinking about how to identify this in patients, really not just gloss over the lid. And in general, I think we're all having to start to pay more attention to the lids because there's a lot more things we're realizing are going on there, even with like meibomian gland dysfunction. So that being said, what I have found helps is just, you know, when I'm first walking in the room, looking at the patient, identifying things facially that may be going on that might be affecting their eyes, their vision, or their happiness with their, you know, the way that they look. Then when I'm in the slit lamp, I mean, a really easy way is you're looking right there at the eyes, have them look down and then look straight. And when they're looking straight, you're going to see, you know, where's that marginal reflex distance? Where is, where are the lids hitting? Is it above the pupil, bisecting the pupil at all? And really just make it something that's part of your flow and is a much easier way, just a quick little thing to put in there when we're already under the slit lamp.
Surgical treatment is the standard of care for ptosis management, but benefits must be weighed against risks. Mechanical treatments, such as scleral lenses, score poorly in patient satisfaction. The FDA has approved oxymetazoline HCl ophthalmic solution 0.1% for the treatment of acquired blepharoptosis. Clinical trials of oxymetazoline HCl solution have shown significant improvement in ptosis compared to control and also a good safety profile. Doctors Brugic and Ketting reviewed how to select initial medical versus surgical therapy for patients with ptosis.
So with certain patients, there's going to be indicators as to whether or not medical drop versus using any kind of surgical might be indicated first in either case. A lot of times this may be, you know, can that patient have surgery? Are they physically able to go and have surgery, or, you know, is being sedated a problem for them and we really should be trying the drop? Going back to an IOL patient, a premium IOL patient who versus having their IOL exchanged, using a drop to see, is that maybe part lid that might be causing some of the dyspotopsia that they're having? Patients who surgical is probably indicated, we're talking more about other types of issues, people who it's so severe that we know that the drop getting 2 to 3 millimeters of improvement is not going to do enough, or where we use the drop and it's not, it did not work well. Another thing is, you know, if we're thinking about other medical problems, so somebody's actually had a palsy, cranial nerve 3 palsy, where it's not going to work at all, we know that it's probably going to be looking at some kind of surgical intervention there.
Now we turn to Demodex blepharitis. Blepharitis is a largely underserved condition, with approximately 58% of patients in the eye clinic having symptoms like collarettes, but few of these individuals receive a blepharitis diagnosis. In addition to collarettes, symptoms of Demodex blepharitis include red, itchy, and irritated eyelids with debris on the eyelashes. Complications may include blurred vision, lost eyelashes, and inflammation of the cornea. Studies also link Demodex blepharitis to contact lens intolerance. Doctors Brugic and Ketting outlined current gaps in the standard of care for Demodex blepharitis.
So currently we have a gap in care for Demodex blepharitis for absolute sure. We've got something coming in and waiting on FDA approval for a drop for that, which is really exciting because we will have something that is specifically made and indicated for that. But as of right now, we're all kind of throwing together our own protocols, whether it be tea tree oil, Manuka honey, we've got okra, which are all wonderful options and they work, but it definitely is not a very short treatment. And we know that it typically is something that's going to have to be redone on, you know, a 2-3 times a year basis when they're having a flare up.
Definitive diagnosis of Demodex blepharitis is made by light microscopy examination of lash samples. If lash sampling is not available, the presence of both itching and collarettes suggests Demodex infestation. Treatment to date has involved microblepharoexfoliation and topical treatments such as with tea tree oil. Agents currently in clinical trials for Demodex include ivermectin and metronidazole. Lodilaner ophthalmic solution 0.25% is also currently under investigation for the treatment of Demodex blepharitis. This agent paralyzes and eradicates Demodex mites. In a clinical trial, treatment with lodilaner ophthalmic solution resulted in complete collarette cure at day 43 in 44% of patients, which was a significant difference from the 7.4% cure rate seen in patients treated with vehicle. Treatment with lodilaner ophthalmic solution also resulted in significantly higher rates of mite eradication and lower rates of erythema compared to vehicle. Adverse events associated with lodilaner ophthalmic solution were mild and included pain at installation site, burning, and stinging. Doctors Brugic and Ketting commented on the results of clinical trials of Lodalon or ophthalmic solution, and if approved, where it might fit in the current treatment paradigm for Demodex blepharitis.
TP-03 is an interesting agent, and here's why. It was actually studied in individuals with Demodex blepharitis, and key endpoints were, one, the eradication of Demodex from lash follicles, and two, the eradication of collarettes. So here was the study design. They actually randomized individuals who had substantial or significant collarettes on their upper and lower lid margins to either receive placebo or TP-03, the active being lotilaner. And the drops were dosed twice a day. Now, here's the interesting thing. The drops weren't dosed and then rubbed into the eyelash margin. The drops weren't dosed and then you had to scrub the eyelids. It was just a drop that was dosed on the eye twice a day. And they followed up with these individuals over time, but the FDA data that, or the data that's been submitted to the FDA as the primary endpoint is, what does that look like in 6 weeks? And what was remarkable was the eradication rate. So there was a complete eradication, zero Demodex cultured from 50% of the individuals utilizing TP-03. There was a substantial reduction in collarettes as well too. And that was either a grade zero or one. There was approximately 86 of individuals that were randomized to active that had either zero or level one blepharitis at that 6 week mark. The reason why I think this is important is it fills this massive gap that we've been looking for to treat these patients comfortably and effectively. And it seems like, assuming that the FDA approves this, that we'll now have a treatment option that finally really creates and gets to this gap in clinical care that we've been wanting and needing for our patients as well. So if TP-03 is approved, I think it kind of changes everything. And the reason why I say that is, you know, imagine the patients that have the blepharitis that are constantly on lid scrubs. Immediately, I start thinking about how much easier will this be for those patients if it's an effective treatment option for them? How long will the eradication last for these patients? They actually did some extended studies that showed a year out, there's still a high percentage of patients who don't have collarettes that are coming back. I mean, this could be a total game changer for patients who are dealing with these chronic blepharitis issues. So again, I think it might start changing the way that we not only identify, but also treat these patients as being a first line and having the ability to really eradicate the underlying condition that's causing a lot of these ocular surface issues.
Care in communicating a Demodex diagnosis to patients and outlining the importance of adhering to treatment is key to a good outcome. Doctors Brugic and Ketting reviewed the role of patient communication when a Demodex diagnosis is made.
I think the role of communication is critical. I think we've done everything we possibly can to really make everything that we're treating with patients much more tangible. We live in this world. We live in this space. We see eyelashes, eyelids. We see everything when it comes to the eyes all the time. So we're very familiar with these structures. Patients are not. You can actually see right behind me there. We have a slit lamp camera or imaging system in every single one of our exam rooms in our Bowling Green office. And much of the reason we have that is so that we can directly and immediately educate patients on what is going on with their condition. So when they actually see it, it just seems more real to them and they can understand it, because oftentimes these collarettes are so slight that they can't even see them and they're trying to associate them with symptoms. So I think communication and I think education is so critically important in this condition.
Thank you for your attention, and we hope that this program was informative and of benefit to your practice. Thanks for listening to this PERspectives podcast. If you liked today's episode, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening.